Hi, I'm Mitchell Walker, and when I'm not teaching people how to find hidden money, I'm out stacking Benjamins.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and welcome to another glorious Friday. Not only do we have the master of doom, Len Penzo, but also, for the first time on a Friday, the one and only, OJJJJG! On today's show, some troubling statistics about New Year's resolutions. How do you keep your resolutions alive? Plus, Hoda Kotb is taken over for Matt Lauer on the Today Show. What should you not do when you score a big promotion at your job? We'll also ask the Roundtable Gang those questions, plus help someone answer a Bloom voicemail and answer a listener letter. In our Friday FinTech segment, what if we turned the S&P 500 upside down so it wasn't so focused on companies like Apple? Here with more on a new index doing just that, called the Reverse Cap-Weighted U.S. ETF, we welcome to the basement, Phil Back. And now, the guy who's ready for happy hour down at the Sizzler, Joe Salcihi.
Friday, happy hour, but probably not at the Sizzler.
Yay.
Hey, everybody, I am Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter, and sitting here at the card table for the first time on a Friday, it's the one and only OG. Yeah, I like how you clap for yourself. You know, I didn't hear anybody else. Actually, we should be clapping. Yes. There it is. How are you, man? Glad to have you here on a Friday, OG.
Not to put too fine a point on it, but was it like time and a half for today?
We'll give you
times zero. What is that?
Yeah, we're going to give him five times what you were making before. Five times.
Five times pay. Okay.
Yes. Isn't that great? Because across the card table from you on my left, normally in Los Angeles, California, in his bunker, but he's here in Texarkana with us today, the one and only Len Penzo.
Joe, how are you, my friend?
I'm calling everybody the one and only today. You're the one and only Len Penzo. He's the one and only OG. I'm the one and only Joe.
There's lots of Joes.
There's totally a ton of Joes. I'm great. How are you, Mr. Penzo?
I am just phenomenal. We've got the new year and things are looking good so far. And man, I'm excited.
Did you slap that eight ball around after last Friday's show?
Oh my God. Let me tell you, I'm very disappointed. Very disappointed, Joe. And the pressure is on now for next year.
So. Well, I say we just don't have anybody ask it questions except you, me, Paula, and now OG.
Hey, because your listeners, they were the ones asking the toughies.
I think they ruined it. I mean, no offense, guys, because we love the listener, right? if it weren't for having a listener, probably wouldn't be a show. But come on, they must be asking it too tough a question. You know, it's not a tough question, Len.
What's that, Joe?
Is why the heck we go to magnifymoney.com using
They're
the Stacking Benjamins.
Friday, good to know.
There is nothing better than a bad segue to Magnify Money. Because you know what you find? You find that you'll save over $450. That's what the average person saves when they go to Magnify Money. You comparison shop everything. Why not those financial products you use every stinking day? StackyBenjamins.com/Magnify Money for the best in checking accounts, savings accounts, credit cards, whether it's 0%, pay off those credit cards with high interest rates, roll them over. Or if you're paying your credit cards every month, how about making sure the student loans are paid off or play the reward point game, whatever it is, StackyBenjamins.com/Magnify Money. Also brought to you by Stacking Benjamins Courses. Who would you rather learn from, that boring financial monotone person or the people you have fun with every Monday, Wednesday, Friday? Head to learn.stackybenjamins.com for more on Stacking Benjamins Courses. We got tax time coming up, so we've got how to legally cheat on your taxes on a lot of people's mind. I love legally cheating on my taxes.
I like illegally cheating on my taxes. It's way riskier.
OG loves the thrill of that, except the knock on the door afterwards, Len.
Yeah.
That knock later.
See, OG with a name like OG, they're not going to hunt you down, OG.
Good luck.
The IRS, but I can't say that. They know, the IRS knows exactly who I am.
With a name like Len Penzo, they think you're part of the mafia. That's what I don't know where that came from. I don't know, but I do know we got some great headlines, guys, so let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our first headline comes to us from the Money-ish blog. This is written by Katie Hill over there. She says, by January 31st, many of us will have abandoned our New Year's resolution to lose weight. Here's how to motivate yourself to go to the gym or cut your losses. It seems like it's not just about the gym, Mr. Penzo. People, 7 in 10 Americans, it says, are overweight because they can't stick to their New Year's resolution. What the heck's that all about?
Well, you know what? It's easy to make a resolution, right? It's always difficult to follow through. And I thought this article gave some pretty good advice, actually, for how to at least do something to kick you in the pants and make you follow through on what you promised to do.
Well, let's talk about one of those. What's your favorite?
Actually, I guess making a list and then checking it twice and telling a friend. Because you set those goals, and then when you tell the friend, it kind of puts you on the spot, right? Because you know then that friend's going to start asking you down the road how you're coming along with that thing. So it's kind of like a check and balance scheme. And I thought that was pretty good to do something to get you to kick started.
Do people feel guilty, OG, when they come into your office? Because you're kind of that guy, right? I mean, you're the guy that they tell, yeah, I'm going to do that by our next meeting. And they're like, yeah, I did nothing.
I thought you were going to ask me what my favorite part of the article was. And I was going to say that I begin with the end in mind. So I read the last paragraph where she says, just cancel your gym membership. So I skipped right from that part.
That's his favorite part. Just get rid of the
just cancel it and save yourself the money.
Oh, gee, fat and happy, yeah. And saves himself $58 a month.
Quite a deal. You know,
is that what it is now? Is it really $58 a month for? I mean, I saw that in the article, but that boy, it's. I remember I first joined a gym. I'm dating myself again here, but $10. $10 a month for life.
Welcome to the Friday show, OG, where Len tells stories about taking the horse and buggy. Down to the gym. We'd watch.
Wait until I start telling OG to get off the lawn.
That's right. We'd get around the TV and watch Bonanza. It was incredible. but seriously, OG, you know how? I mean, you got to be that guy who says, "Hey, you know what? You didn't follow through.
Yeah, you said you were going to do this, and you didn't." It's a real delicate balance, of course, between the carrot and the stick, right? You got to prod people along, motivate them, but then on occasion, you know, you got to put up the mirror and say, hey, you said you wanted to do this. If you don't want to, just say you don't want to do it. It's just a lot easier for everybody involved to just be honest, right?
People say a new habit takes 21 days. And it says here that, quote, rule has been around since the 60s. New research debunks it. A study published in 2009 in the European Journal of Social Psychology, what do they know, found that it takes people an average of 66.
Maybe in Europe it does.
In the U.S. it takes us 14 days.
I know. We're overachievers.
Found it takes people an average of 66 days of doing something each day, like going for a short run each night before it becomes a habit. Len, I think that's true. I mean, I think that, you know, if you give yourself 66 days to become an expert and not 20 days, you're probably more likely to stick to it.
That's true. Although, you know what? I like to eat between meals, and that didn't take me 66 days. I think I had hooked on that habit within about 2 days. So
but how
I guess
do
it depends on what the habit is.
But that's what I was going to say. How do you make the harder habits work like that?
What do you mean?
Well, there's some habits that aren't so easy. I mean, come on. Eating between meals, I got that baby down. Like I'm a pro at that. But if it's something like, you know, you talked in the past about flossing your teeth, right? I mean, there's what you've got flossing your teeth.
Earth-shattering journalism we got going on here. I'm giving up my Friday mornings for what?
He's got.
Hold on, OG. You're going to learn some stuff here.
Okay, yeah, the week.
Does OG know the story about flossing the teeth? Look, I've told this before, and it's true. And a hygienist told me this, and it's absolutely true. I just tested it out a few weeks ago. All you have to do is floss 3 days before you go to the dentist. And the hygienist is going to think you've been flossing the whole 6 month period between your checkups.
See, I go the exact opposite way. You overwhelm them with other stuff. So I do the handful of Oreos before you walk in, and then they're not even on the flossing thing.
they don't have time to complain about the flossing because they got the other stuff.
I'm going to have to try that.
You ever do that with your financial plan? Just walk in with tons of credit card debt so they can't complain about the fact you haven't saved?
There you go. I kind of feel like I do that every week, every month.
Yeah. That's so bad. But seriously, with the stuff that's tougher, the 66 days, Len, I mean, how do you do that?
Look, seriously, it comes down to discipline. There's no magic pill. No matter what you do, you have to have some discipline and you have to be committed. And without that, I don't think there's any trick that will force you to do something that you don't.
I don't agree. I don't agree with that at all.
I was going to say, really? I have a trick.
Are you serious?
I've got a trick.
Really? So tell me, Joe. Tell me.
Well, OG, you first.
I think most people set themselves up for failure when it comes to these sorts of things, right? I'm going to go to the gym every day at 6 a.m. for the next 30 days. No, you're not. If you haven't done it before, you're not going to start it today. I mean, some people do that, but not very few, you know, not very many. I had a goal during the fall, and Joe, obviously you had your running goal too, of making sure that I lifted weights every day. But here was the key. I put no pressure on lifting them for any length of time. So there were literally days where I picked them out of the dumbbell thing, out of the little Bowflex dealios, you know, you kind of dial up the weight all the way to like 8 pounds, you know? So I picked, so, you know, I like literally I would pick it up and I would put it right back down and go, I did it for today. But it's all about like putting yourself in a position to make a small step, because most times I did more than that, but there were occasional times where I didn't. And it was perfectly fine. It was perfectly okay. So if your goal is to...
But that's the hard part. The hard part's getting your butt there with the weight in your hand. Once you're there, you're like, oh, I might as well lift.
Exactly. So I did. I just have them in the house, so I didn't go anywhere. Right. But like if you were doing this for your workout stuff and you said, try to make this successful, I would change the goal from going to the gym every day to I'm going to put my workout clothes on. I'm just going to put them on.
I'd start sooner. I'm going to get out of bed. Right. Just get out of bed.
Yeah, okay.
Start slow. Start slower, OG.
It's not about starting slow. It's like building the muscle, right? You don't. Yeah. You know, there's some syncopicity here, I guess. Synchronicity.
Yeah.
But
I think it's also about gamification. I've seen lots of articles on this. If you turn it into a little game in your head, you know, it goes from being a chore to being fun. So maybe you've got some reward. You know, there's this app, this tip yourself app, where you tip yourself when you do something.
Take money out of one bank account and put it in the other.
Totally.
Boy, that would really motivate me.
Here's another tip though. If you have a friend, if we're talking about like working out, that really helps. I know
accountability buddies. Absolutely.
Yeah. My, all through my life going to the gym, I had a buddy usually, and it was a lot easier because you had that buddy pushing you. Come on, we're going, you know, you can't tell him no. So
I would say that the other thing that I would add to that is putting something at the end of, to kind of add to what you said, Joe, put something at the end of working out. Like, what's the purpose? The purpose can't be, you know, so I'm healthy, because that's too ambiguous, right? You have to have something like, I'm going on a beach vacation in March and I'm going to put this bathing suit on, you know, put the bathing suit on in January and stay in front of the mirror for a little while. Then maybe you go to the gym, you know, unless you're like me and then you just go, no, I'm good.
The more, I'm going to leave that alone. The more specific the goal, though, the better I think it is. I think we're going to leave that there. Our second piece comes to us from MarketWatch. Here's what not to do if, like, Hoda Kotb, you get a big promotion. This piece written by Jacob Passy says, after getting a new promotion, Hoda Kotb will need to stay alert during this transitional period, and not just because how dicey shakeups at the Today Show can be. Kotb, 53, was named as the new co-anchor of NBC's Today, joining Savannah Guthrie at the helm of the popular morning show's first 2 hours. Kotb steps into the vacancy led by Matt Lauer, who was fired in late November amid allegations of sexual harassment in the workplace. So it goes through here, Len, about when you get that big promotion at work, that it's probably a good idea to stay humble. You work for the man that you've seen people fall prey to some of this.
You know, I was reading this and I was like, I really don't. Now, maybe it's just because we're a bunch of, you know, it's engineers and they're not... They're kind of introverted anyways, and there's not a lot of big egos, at least where I'm working. But I just thought, I think it's a bad idea if you get a promotion to toot your horn too much and get uppity. You just take things in stride.
I don't know, man. Where I used to work, I saw this all the time. How about you, OG? Did you see this? People just decided, I'm too good for you now.
I was going to say, do you see me scratching off list of things not to do with my big promotion to Fridays? Don't lord it over Doug.
Promotion?
Do not lord it over Doug. Understood. It happened all the time. It happens. Now I work with you in the basement. So, I mean, we can one up each other all day long, I guess.
And we're still in the basement.
We're still in the basement.
But it is a problem. You got to be more humble than ever. You get that big promotion because everybody around you is just looking to see you fail.
Especially if it was kind of a promotion, maybe about who you knew. And maybe there's like half the people that don't think that you're ready for that. And then you start walking around going, look at me. I got the big, corner office now in the boss's ear. You're going to alienate yourself pretty quick.
Is that
if you hadn't already at that point.
Is that why a lot of times, Len, you think companies hire from the outside just so they get around that instead of, well, they're not ready. They weren't ready. So we hired somebody from a different firm.
Well, sometimes you want an outside perspective that you can't get from inside the firm. So yes, I that is possible. I mean, and it happens. But I mean, if you're going to be thrown into a leadership role, here's my two rules for when you're in a leadership role. One is you always look out for the people under you. The people you go to bat for them, you go to the wall for them if you have to. And two is you lead by example. So if you do those two things, everything else usually falls into place. Oh, and number three, most important, don't be afraid of failure. Because if you're leading, sometimes failure happens and you have to take the bad with the good. And if you do fail, you just have to continue on forward and try and keep pushing forward. But those who are afraid of failure can never be good leaders. And I've seen that a lot.
Oh, gee, what's worked for you in leadership positions?
I can't remember if this is a book or if I just heard it somewhere. Leaders eat last. I mean, I was in the service and I can remember different promotions along the way. And kind of the last one that I got was kind of the big step. Right. And so at that point in time, everybody looks to you, you were equals 34 seconds ago, and now you're the boss. Right. And so in some respects you have to act like it and you have to do things like take it on the chin and like be the person who, goes into the boss's office and, is going to get beat down if something happened below you, but you never let that stuff roll downhill, and kind of like what Len says, if you're the person that looks out for the people below you, at least if you hadn't begun with it, you'll certainly work to earn the respect of the people that you're leading.
Len says here. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I'll give you one more example. So, and I've been put in this position when I first was put in the position, it was very awkward as a younger engineer. I had some older engineers above me.
Right.
And that's very intimidating when you're the leader.
You mean below you. You mean below you.
I mean below me.
Yeah, you had
older engineers below me.
Yes.
With more experience. And it's very intimidating. You have to be a leader and you have to recognize why you were put in that position and you have to lead. And you cannot be too deferential. I mean, listen to the older people because they have good things to say. But when it comes, push comes to shove and a decision has to be made, you have to make the decision and you have to recognize that. So
were those guys or those women, men, were they hard to win over to your team?
It depends. It's the ones I'd say 95%, it was fine. But there's always one or two who are, they feel maybe a little surprised that they were passed over in favor of somebody else. But you just have to deal with it and you have to act like the leader. That's where you throw age and experience out the window and you have to recognize that you were put in that position for a reason. You have to lead.
What about when you say you're put in that position for a reason, it's like, no, the light shined down. It was on me. I mean, it is.
Well, you know what? The company, when they pick you to lead, you are paid to lead and you have to lead.
It's your job.
I'm not saying don't take.
You get the arrows and the land, right?
Yeah, that's right. And you that's part of your job, just taking arrows too. You take arrows. That's part of the part where I was saying you go to bat for the people below you. There's a lot of times you have to take the heat and the people below you will respect you for that.
I'll link to this article in our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com, but I would like to talk about one last thing in here that I'm not sure what to do with. It says, figure out what your predecessor didn't do. While you're working for somebody, do you sit around looking at what their weaknesses are?
No, I mean, I guess there's kind of always that scuttlebutt of the people above you where you just kind of always have something to, if I was a boss, I would, I don't think you'd ever get promoted to that spot if that's who you were. Like if you're always the disgruntled employee, you're never going to be the disgruntled boss, I don't think.
That's what I was thinking, Len, when you were talking about that person that you couldn't win over your team. There's no way they're ever moving up the leadership ladder after that.
That's right. And usually they're old enough that they know that too. So the writing's on the wall at that point. Yes.
Yeah. So these two pieces about keeping your New Year's resolutions and scoring the big raise. OG, what's the big takeaway?
Well, first, definitely score a big raise if that's your New Year's resolution. That's a definite. You should definitely do that.
That's the best takeaway.
You gotta start small. Set up little wins along the way. And if your goal is to go to the gym every day, first of all, don't say that because you're not going to go every day. Put your workout clothes on or put your workout clothes on and then go sit in the car. You know, like just because eventually you're going to go, well, dang it, I'm up and I've got my workout clothes on and I'm in the car and I'm sitting outside the gym. I might as well walk in the damn thing.
Right. And Len, have a friend.
Yeah. If you need help, get a friend on those New Year's resolutions. Make sure you stay strong and be disciplined. And when it comes to the leadership, lead by example. I think that's the most important thing.
Phil Back, upstairs talking to Mom. This guy is from Ann Arbor, which makes my stomach churn. Ugh. I could smell him when he walked in. That's horrible. I love Phil Back is back. He, of course, is the CEO of ACSI Funds and Exponential ETFs. Widely regarded, we've seen him all over the news. He's widely regarded as an expert in the management, development, and trading of exchange-traded funds. Talks on behalf of ETFs quite often. Prior to joining ACSI, Mr. Back was managing director at this place called the New York Stock Exchange. You ever heard of that, Len?
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
I know.
I took a picture in front of that last week, 2 weeks ago.
I know. What did New York Stock Exchange? I've never heard of that place. Where he drove the growth of the NYSE ETF listing business to 90% market share by assets under management and over $2 trillion in total assets for NYSE listed ETFs. He also acted as senior product manager for Guggenheim Investments, where he developed alternative mutual funds and ETFs. He's a big proponent of pushing the envelope on ETFs. And when he was here last time, he talked about how active management actually isn't dead. It's having a resurgence. And he's back with a new ETF. Kind of turns the S&P, well, actually literally turns the S&P 500 on its head. Let's say hello to Mr. Phil Back. And coming down to the stairs to the basement for the second time, our friend Phil Back. Although I call you friend, Phil, but you're from Ann Arbor, and I don't know if I'm allowed to call you a friend.
You can call me a friend. I'm here in Ann Arbor, but I'm really just here for the weather. We've been between 3 degrees and 6 degrees for about 2 weeks now, and I am cold, so joke's on me. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's good that you come to Texarkana where it's 25. That's excellent. Balmy. Brought your swimsuit and everything. Well, let's talk about your new ETF, the reverse cap weighted U.S. exchange traded fund. What's the problem with the S&P 500 itself that you were trying to solve when you created the ETF?
So, and thanks for having me on. It's great to be back on. There are two issues that we found with the S&P 500, not really the S&P 500, but any market cap weighted ETF. The first is that inherently, when you say that the market capitalization of a company is, that's representative of what that company is worth relative to the entire market. The market capitalization number is actually very volatile. You have over time, you have an index where every quarter you're buying high and selling low. So at every quarter, you take the money away from the stocks that have gone down and you reallocate it to the stocks that have gone up. And over time, you have this momentum effect. And what we've seen is now that the S&P is so big, is, you know, $8 trillion between derivatives and ETFs and options and futures that are benchmarked to it. What we've seen is that there's been such a runaway of the top tier companies in the S&P 500. Right now, if you look at it, the top 50 companies in the S&P 500 have a higher weighting than the bottom 450.
Wow.
And Apple is the top weighted company. It's got a higher weighting than the bottom 110 companies combined. So I think people feel like, well, I'm in the S&P 500. I'm in a very broad, diversified representation of the entire market. That's not exactly true. You are in a diversified portfolio that has 500 stocks, but there's a lot of concentration risk within that portfolio.
Yeah, by and large, you're buying Apple.
Not entirely, but to a very large extent, especially if you look at the overall FANG trade, including Microsoft, you're talking about 18% of the portfolio and a very outsized percentage of you know, total impact to the portfolio.
Now, when you talk FANG trade, by the way, there's some people listening to Stacking Benjamins that have no idea what you're talking about there. What does FANG mean?
So we're talking about Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google. And like I said, some people will throw Microsoft in there together.
Sure, right.
And the amazing thing about these stocks have been so phenomenal from a performance standpoint over the last few years that they've driven in 2017, I forgot the exact number, but somewhere around 35 to 40% of the total returns of the S&P 500 came from those stocks. So if that continues indefinitely, you know, forever, then you want to be in a momentum strategy, and market capitalization is definitely a better way to go than reverse cap. But we don't know if that trend is going to continue forever. I mean, on a long enough time horizon, that's certainly going to reverse at some point. And there's a lot of risk there that I think people are ignoring when they, you know, think about, well, you know, I'm a passive investor. I'm in a broad cap weighted index.
Yeah. So you've got this concentration risk where you're not as diversified as you could be. If we flip that upside down, though, the S&P 500, we flip it upside down. Tell me the effect of that then, Phil.
So the other issue that we have with market cap weighting is there's a Fama French factor that's small minus big. And the idea is that over the long term, in up markets, in normal market conditions, small cap stocks will outperform large cap stocks, although they do so with higher risk and, you know, not in every market environment. But by and large, over the long term, small caps tend to perform better than large caps. By doing market cap weighting in the S&P 500, the index is by nature tilted away from those better performers that are further down the market cap spectrum. So what we're doing now is we flip it upside down, we get away from some of the concentration issues, but also we take advantage of what we call that size premia, that advantage that the smaller companies have relative to the larger companies over time. Again, not in every market condition, but over time, it does tend to perform better. Historically, this is based on back-tested data from S&P, but we've seen that there can be a pretty decent amount of alpha over the long term.
That's what I was going to ask you about. When you flip it upside down, then, are you saying that instead of being heavy into Apple, now we're very highly concentrated in company number 500? How does that work?
That's exactly right. So right now, the 500th company is Chesapeake Energy. You know, it's a great company. It's certainly not a household name, but that's our top weighting. And, you know, at the end of the quarter, if S&P takes Chesapeake out of the index, or if there's another stock that slides further down and is now the smallest, that becomes our top holding on a systematic basis. Our largest position is always going to be the smallest position in the S&P, and the largest position in the S&P, which is currently Apple, is going to be our smallest position.
Some people listening to this have no idea about how exchange traded funds work. And when they hear that things are swapping out, like they think that this is going to have a tax problem. But I think that the way the tax laws work and just the way the mechanism of an exchange traded fund works, Phil, you're not going to have a tax problem with these movements quarter by quarter.
Well, you shouldn't. In most cases, you won't.
Okay.
In 2017, we did not pay capital gains on the reverse cap weight ETF. It just launched, though, in November. I have to caveat it because there is always the potential that there will be capital gains in an ETF if it's not managed correctly. But there's a mechanism inherent in the ETF structure, which is called the creation redemption mechanism, and it allows portfolio managers to swap out different stocks in kind. And, you know, I can get, you know, real geeky and,
right,
you know, roll up my sleeves on this stuff. But, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, if all goes well in most market conditions and with most ETFs, you're not going to have capital gains the way you would in a mutual fund if you have redemptions in the mutual fund. Those capital gains are distributed not to the people who redeemed out of the fund, but to the people who stayed in, which is very unfair to the investors.
Right.
ETFs solve for that problem.
Do you see this replacing S&P 500 in somebody's portfolio? Does it have a similar risk profile?
It has a similar risk profile. It has a little bit of a higher beta. So the beta is about 1.3, which means that, you know, for every move in the market, you would expect about a 30% bigger move in reverse cap weight. So, you know, depending on what, you know, a financial professional deems appropriate for any specific investor, it may or may not be appropriate for certain investors. We think it can be used for some investors in the right, you know, circumstance and the right risk profile, that it can be used instead of a market cap weighted position to give them their exposure to the S&P 500 constituents, to the large cap. But it could also be used alongside the S&P to diversify away some of that concentration risk. So
gotcha.
When you add reverse cap with market cap weighting, all of a sudden, if you look at the total holdings, they're all the same 500 stocks that you owned if you owned one of them. But when you own the two together, the spread, the distribution of those holdings among the 500 companies, it looks a lot more even. And there's some diversification benefits that come along with that.
And do I find that if the S&P 500 is, I would guess right now with using FANG stocks, that it's more tilted currently toward the growth side. I don't know if that's true or not. I haven't looked at it in a little while. But does this tilt the S&P 500 more toward value, or does it? How does that change the profile?
Yeah, it does. That's a great catch. It tilts it more towards value. It's really more momentum than growth that market cap weighting correlates to, but it correlates to both, especially right now with that FANG trade and with the tech-heavy allocation that we see, you know, more than we've ever seen before in the S&P 500. There is a very large growth tilt and a growth correlation in the cap-weighted version. We get a lot closer to value, but it's not exactly a value fund. You are buying low and selling high, but we really call it a size premium fund. Gotcha. Where you're taking advantage of that extra expected return that you get in a small cap versus a large cap, but you're doing it within your large cap. And there's a paper that was written by AQR, and there's a theory out there that there's a size premium that you can expect greater returns for a small cap relative to a large cap stock, but there are other factors that you have to manage for in order to take advantage of that, like liquidity, like quality controls for different companies that might not be marked to market appropriately. So by doing this within large cap only, so within the constituents of the S&P 500, we think we've solved for a lot of those issues and found a way to give investors a tool to, you know, to do a little better than they do in market cap weighting, by capturing that size premium, but not by taking money out of large cap and putting it into small cap, which we find to be a lot riskier.
It's so interesting. It goes back to the conversation that you and Jamie Wise and I had about all the innovation that guys like you have. I still think this is the tip of the iceberg, Phil. Just the stuff that you're coming up with is phenomenal. How do people buy it? What's the ticker symbol?
The ticker is RVRS, and I really appreciate that, and I agree. Right now, we're in the middle of a renaissance in the asset management space where we're seeing, you know, rules-based, systematic approaches to people trying to find ways to create alpha, to create better products for their clients and for investors. And the ETF has, you know, been the vehicle that has captured a lot of that innovation.
And the fact that you're able to do that while you're in Arbor, to me, is just amazing. It's just as tough. How you can be the guy finding this in that horrible city is brilliant. Just makes you even more brilliant. But thanks a ton for coming on. How do people find out more before they invest? What's your website?
ExponentialETFs.com and ReverseETF.com. We'll have more fund-specific information.
Awesome. And we'll link to those in our show notes at StackyBenjamins.com. Phil Bax, party on, man.
Thank you very much. All right.
Hey there, trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And you know, as Joe's mom says,
a year from now, you'll wish you had started today.
That's actually exactly what she sounds like. So let's not dilly-dally and get right into today's trivia, shall we? Here's your question. We heard in the headlines that Hoda Kotb is the new host of the Today Show. But here's something you may not know. What year was the first airing of the Today Show? I'll be back with the astounding answer and some of Joe's mom's fruitcake in just a moment.
All right, raise your hand. Do you drive an extra 5 minutes in traffic to save just a few pennies at the gas pump? Well, when's the last time you spent 5 minutes trying to save on the big things like auto loans? Lucky for you, we brought in Nick Clements from Magnify Money with a few tips on saving money if you find yourself financing a car.
If you're buying a new car, there's really no better deal than the 0% financing that would be offered by the manufacturer. The issue really starts to happen if you don't qualify for the manufacturer's financing or you're buying a used car. And in those cases, I think it's a very good idea to always shop online and get a low rate before you walk onto the lot. Chances are high that the dealer will beat it, but if you don't walk onto the lot with a low rate to begin with, you know you won't get the best deal.
Thanks, Nick. More than just auto loans, Magnify Money's the perfect spot for reviewing just how well or not your checking and savings accounts are performing. You might just decide to switch banks. And guess what? Why stick with just one bank at all when you can use MagnifyMoney.com to always find best-in-class stuff? StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. Average person saves $450 in interest when they go there. StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney.
The following is an actor, not a real person. We tried to find an actual Stacking Benjamins podcast listener, but we're not sure any exist.
Yesterday, I turned on one of those other podcasts. Ugh, more money talk? The topic was something called long-term care, and they couldn't even make me care for the short term. That podcast made me feel like just another number.
Hi, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, the huge star of the award-winning Stacking Benjamin show. Are you tired of podcasts that blabber on about money? Are you confused about all this IRA, SEPP, 72T, and fiduciary talk? At Stacking Benjamins, you're not just another number to us. Heck, if you actually listen, you're the only number. That's why we barely ever talk about money. Better yet, we treat you like family. We'll invite you on down to Joe's mom's basement, serve you some pie and maybe even a little lemonade, and best yet, when you leave, we'll complain about you behind your back. Because that's what real family moments are all about.
I'm never going back to that old podcast. Stacking Benjamins is a way for me to avoid numbers and feel that warm, fuzzy feeling I get every time I scream at my sister on the phone.
Stacking Benjamins, where you're not a number. Your family.
Hey, trivia nerds. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, back with your trivia answer. Miss me? Save your breath. I already know your answer. Today's question was this. What year was the first airing of the Today Show? The answer? Well, if you said 1952, you're an overachiever. If you said January 15th of that year, Joe's mom will want to have a word with you about Googling the answer. No cheating on this show, people. See ya.
Len Penzo with the big win.
Yeah.
Nice job. I love how OG, though, Len, how he wimps out and just goes, I'll take the over.
Hey, that's a clever. I was a little worried there. I thought I might lose out. It was a good move. If we were playing Price is Right, it would have worked. But
we both lost. Work, we were both it? Over.
That's right.
You should have bid one.
Yeah, exactly.
You should have said AD one.
Which in the old days, remember Greg McFarland's rant about that? About how that rule was baloney? That went for like 4 minutes, didn't it?
I agree with them.
The Price is Right overrule. What's that all about? I'd never had a strong opinion about that. But
you never did? It always irritated me. Because it's the person who always went last always wins.
Thanks a lot to Phil Beck for coming down to the basement. And excited to see some new ETFs like that and some very interesting ETFs. Well, can't wait to see what the future holds because I know that 2018, I think, is going to be a big year for that. Oh. We got to make sure I put the third O on there, Len. Looks like somebody needs help. All three of those O's, sponsored by Bloom, smart, simple 401k management. Well, guess what? It's that time of year again, and we all make good-natured financial New Year's resolutions, hoping to change our lives for the better. Then February hits, we can't even spell New Year's resolution. Well, this year's different. Make a resolution to get your retirement on track and fix your 401k with Bloom. That's Bloom with three O's. Sound tough? It's not. In fact, it takes only 5 minutes. Go online to stackybenjamins.com/BLOOM to find out more. With Bloom, you can simply connect your existing 401k in a few easy steps. Sit back and relax while Bloom performs an unbiased analysis of the funds in your account and chooses the best mix to meet your goals while minimizing hidden investment fees. Bloom only costs $10 a month, and it doesn't matter how big or small your account is. 10 bucks a month for Bloom. StackyBenjamins.com/BLOOM for more. And today, calling us on the Bloom helpline for some help is our new friend, Lynn. Say hi, Lynn.
Hi, guys. This is Lynn. My question is regarding how much cash you should have on hand in retirement beyond your emergency fund. I've been reading several articles recently where the authors believe you need to have a stash of cash available for living expenses for times when the market is bad and you don't want to sell assets. What are your thoughts about this? How much do you think you should have on hand? Does this figure change if you have a pension? I have estimated my living expenses in retirement will be about $4,500 a month, and my pension will cover almost half of that after taxes. I expect to retire when I'm 62 and take Social Security at 67, and my pension and Social Security will hopefully cover around $3,600 of my expenses. Thanks for the podcast. It keeps me entertained on a really long commute, and I never learn anything.
So fantastic. Thanks for the question, Lynn. And We've got a t-shirt coming your way for braving the Bloom hotline. So Len Penzo, let's start with you, man. What do you think? She's got a pension coming and Social Security coming. Does that lower the amount she needs in cash as a retiree?
Well, it depends if you how much faith you have in the pension and Social Security. Now, the first thing that came to mind here for Lynn is if her expenses are $4,500 a month, right? And if I heard this correctly, her pension is about $2,250, maybe $2,300 at age 62. And then at age 67, her Social Security is like another $1,300, $1,400. So that tells me right off the bat that her living expenses are above her combined pension and Social Security.
She's going to definitely, like a lot of people, she's going to take some money out of savings, but starting at 67, it's not significant.
Well, it's not, but it's a $900 a month deficit. So yeah, I mean, you definitely got to have some money set aside to cover that deficit. So, you know, what is that? $11,000 a year.
I think she's talking though, Len, beyond her money that she has coming out to just cover her living expenses. Should she still have a cash reserve? Should she still have an emergency fund?
And is that what she's asking?
Yeah, that's exactly, I think, what she's asking.
Like, how much of the portfolio should be in cash versus invested?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know what? Then I'd say, you know, that's a personal question. That's really up to her. But, I don't know. I would probably have her whole expenses. I'd have at least a year's living expenses in cash, at least, I would say, maybe 2 years. But that's me, Mr. Risk averse.
So. Yeah, they say on the low end, 3 to 6 months. And that was my question, actually. Should she go on the low end because she's got that pension in her back pocket?
No way. No, I would do so cash reserve and cash in your retirement investment account for the purpose she's talking about, which is how do I prevent withdrawing money out of my investment account if the market takes a tumble, you know, it's down 30%.
So you like what Len's talking about, having more money there.
2 years.
Yeah.
Yep. And here's how I base that on. If you look at the history of stock market declines, first of all, we're never going to be able to pick when that stock market decline is going to start. So we're going to see it once we're into it. So that's going to be somewhat of a, it feels pretty bad right now. The average entry year peak to trough decline is about 14.5% on an annual basis. Last year was really small volatile year. The peak to trough is only about -3, which is unnoticeable.
Yeah.
But the average is about 14%. So you got to pick a number lower than that, but let's say 20%. So I've got an investment account that's got $500,000 in it, comfortably can pull my $12,000 a year out of my investment account. You know, you think about the 4% rule, everything's good. I'm going to have $24,000 in cash. The rest of the, you know, or maybe 25 round, the other 475,000 is going to be invested, diversified. And then I'm going to dollar cost average my $1,000 a month out of that 475. When the market goes down a predetermined amount, you get to pick that, Lynn. Nobody else can. So maybe you say 20%. Then you freeze distributions from your portfolio. And now you're going to take all the money for the next 2 years out of your cash portion of your account. So it gives your investment account 2 full years from when you notice it to just do its thing and recover, knock on wood, 2 years later, that your portfolio is recovered completely, take 2 years back out, dump it back in cash, you're off to the races.
Len, 2 years of money in cash, how much of the rest of it's hidden under your bed?
None of it under the bed. It's all in the bunker, Joe.
It's all of it. It's heavy. Heavy metal.
It's heavy metal.
Yeah.
He's buying the actual Bitcoin.
That's right.
Physical Bitcoin.
He owns the physical Bitcoin. You didn't even know that existed, did you, OG?
Yeah. It's those little chocolate candies with the gold.
Yeah, it always gets me that, you know, the Bitcoin, they always show a picture of it. What is it? It's always a gold coin.
With a B written on it. Like a fancy B.
Yeah.
Correct.
Almost like cursive, but not cursive.
Yeah.
Well, that's what makes it valuable.
I don't know about that. I get all my Bitcoin advice from Ty Lopez. So his is in a mansion and it's a Ferrari filled with coins with Bs. I don't know if you knew that. Nice.
Very good.
Who these people are.
Did you? No. Yeah. Well, better for you, probably.
Hold on. Let me check my crypto account.
Yeah. No. So I think that's it. I think everybody agrees. Yeah.
2 years.
Yeah.
I think we're pretty much in agreement.
Yeah. I think that's great advice. Thanks for the question, Lynn. If you've got a question for the Bloom Hotline, with Bloom, stackybenjamins.com. And right at the top of the page, you'll see questions for the show. We also get letters down here. Doug just brought down the mail. And today's letter comes to us from Rayanne. She says, "Hi, Joe and OG. I'm a big fan of your show and even make my wife listen to your show on our commute to work." How bad would that suck for the honeybee, Len, if you made her listen to your show, our show? No, you got to listen to this, baby. Would that just, well, I could see you getting your butt kicked.
Oh, I would get my, you know, you've met the honeybee, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd get my ass whooped.
I don't think making anybody listen is good. Like, if you got to make them listen, that makes me feel bad about our show. Like, why do we have a podcast if you got to make people, no, I'm going to force, you know what? I was going to ground you. That's right. I was going to ground you, make you clean your room. Instead, I'm going to make you listen to the Stacking Benjamin show. That's it. But
yeah, it does sound like punishment, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's not good, Radish. We're in our late 30s and make decent annual salaries. We're trying to maximize our investments in tax-advantaged accounts. My wife is contributing the max to her 401k, but I'm limited to contributing just $5,500 each year as my company qualifies me as a highly compensated employee. And then he writes, yeah, right. And they limit my contribution to $5,500. I have an HSA account. That's a health savings account, for those that don't know, where I'm contributing to the max from 2018 onwards to utilize it for retirement as well. We don't qualify to make contributions to the Roth on post-tax and traditional IRA on pre-tax basis because of our income levels. In my situation, what would you suggest is the best option for investing my money? Is contributing to traditional IRAs on a post-tax basis any better than having a separate investment brokerage account? Also, on a little research, I found a strategy for high income folks called the backdoor Roth contribution. Would you advise going that route? Thanks. And I hope you take this question on your show. Keep up the great show with no real learnings. Of course, you can't learn anything if you do keep it to yourself. But OG, what do you think? You going to help Rayanish? And he's, Rayanish is going to force his wife to listen to the answer too, I'll bet.
Don't force your wife to do anything.
It all comes back later.
In all long elliptical orbit. Yeah, absolutely. We don't want to call these backdoor Roths. God forbid you put that on your tax return. Don't write backdoor Roth as purpose for your conversion. But what you're talking about doing is doing a non-deductible contribution to your IRA and subsequently converting it to a Roth. There's a whole list of reasons why you might want to do that and a list of rules to follow. But
anybody can do one of those, right?
Anybody can. Here's the other thing you may want to consider with your 401k company is you may want to see whether they'll allow you to make non-deductible contributions to your 401k past the 5,500 pre-tax contributions that you're doing. Sometimes they'll let you make those additional contributions in a separate account. And that's affectionately known as the mega backdoor Roth IRA. But at the end of the day, this is definitely something that you could do. Just open up an IRA, put the max in, $5,500 per person. Wait a little while so you don't violate any tax laws, and then do a conversion.
Len, do you use both traditional and Roth monies?
You know what? I don't do any Roth IRAs at the moment. No, I do not.
Yeah, just keep it all pre-tax and
it's all pre. Yep, exactly. Yeah. It's all pre-tax stuff. So that's just a choice that I've made, and that's something I've done for forever, and that's just the way I'm going to keep doing it.
Pre-tax and bunker. No, you've got liquid money too, though, right? You keep money liquid, like
I do keep cash. Yes. You mean cash, cash? Yes. I keep cash liquid. Yes. I have ready access to that as well.
Yeah. Just curious about that. Len, anything to add? I think I went right to OG because this was kind of an OG type question, but
I'm actually glad you went to OG. And frankly, I'll be honest. I never even heard of a backdoor Roth until your listener.
There we go.
Wrote that in. So see? I'm sorry to violate the rule here, but I actually learned something today, Joe.
I love how we take the award-winning blogger and we even teach him something. How about that?
Yeah, that was awesome.
That's good.
Not on purpose.
Totally didn't mean it. Swear to God, did not mean it. Thanks for the question, Rayanish. If you've got a question for the show, of course, we prefer you call the Bloom Hotline. But if you want to write us a letter, either way, here's what you do. Head to stackingbenjamins.com. At the top, it says questions for the show. And you'll see the Bloom Hotline at the top. And you'll see then the way to write us a note to the show. And we will answer your question here. Hey, we've got lots of thanking to do. Thank you to everybody for a great 2017. It was just a fantastic year. Thanks to people who have left us a review of this podcast, because that tells people, Len, what type of trouble they're getting into when they listen to the Stacky Benjamin Show. And this one is going on Mom's fridge. Check this out. This review made me laugh. It says, you're only hurting yourself by not listening. 5 stars. That always scares me when somebody starts a review that way. And this is also by Brainwash01, which doesn't fill me full of confidence either. Of all the podcasts I listen to, I can honestly say this is one of them. So thanks, O and Joe G, I guess. I had a sneaking suspicion I was learning something once, but I kept listening and it passed, like a kidney stone, but with no damage to the porcelain. I left 5 stars only because that's the upper limit. Good stuff. That is so awesome. And headed to Mom's fridge. Yeah. If you don't learn what a show this is from that review, I don't know what you're learning from. So thanks a lot for that. Let's talk about what's going on where you live, Mr. Penzo. What's happening at LenPenzo.com?
Hey, I got a little informative piece on how banks work versus how people think they work. And it might be an eye-opener to a lot of people. So stop on by LenPenzo.com and check it out.
Awesome. We'll link to that in our show notes at StackyBenjamins.com. Coming up next week here on the show, we've got on Monday, Candace Marie here, who paid off a bunch of debt. I love these debt payoff stories. You have those sometimes, Len, on your podcast. You sometimes, Len, talk about paying down debt on your blog.
Yeah, usually I have the readers come right in and they do their own articles on how they pay down their debt and how they actually live on less than $40,000 a year. So yeah, I have those features.
I love it. Whenever you've had those, I absolutely love those because there are people living on like peanuts.
Oh, you know, I just got an email today, by the way, from a reader who and I can't wait to get this story. I can't wait till we get this out. But she makes her and her family make over $300,000 a year, and yet they live on under $40,000. And so they're going to tell me how they do it, and I can't wait to share that with everyone.
OG and his family make $300,000, live on $600,000. Do that math.
How do you do it?
And it is flipping magic. But anyway, that's next Monday coming up on the Stacky Benjamin Show. Guys, thanks a lot for playing. And Doug, what should we have learned? Take it from here.
Sure thing, Joe. Why don't you just get back to trying to look at your bald spot in the mirror? I'll tell everybody what we should have learned today if they were actually paying attention. First, New Year's resolutions? The best way to keep a resolution is to focus on your actions and not the result. Maybe you don't reach your favorite finish, but by first deciding what you're going to do, you're way more likely to accomplish something and not get discouraged. Second, reserves in retirement? Still important. If you need cash in a hurry, even if you have a pension coming in, you want to have that available in a hurry in case there's an emergency. But the big lesson? Don't tell Joe's mom, but avoid her fruitcake. Those cheese bits inside and the sausage, oh, God, nasty. Special thanks to Phil Back from Exponential ETFs for joining us. You can learn more about the reverse cap-weighted U.S. ETF on our show notes page at StackingBenjamins.com. Len Penzo appears courtesy of the cryptically named LenPenzo.com. When you're done messing around with us, who do you want to teach you some money tricks? That nerd who talks over your head or your favorite basement-based geeks? Kathleen Selmans operates our Stacking Benjamins classroom, and to make up for the fact that we don't teach you anything here on the show, she's created a whole lot of tools you'll absolutely love. Head to learn.stackingbenjamins.com for details, and use coupon code DOUGROCKS for 10% off. Yeah, you're welcome. This show was created by Joe Salcihi, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. Shannon Cowan is our community manager and social media guru. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I'm pretty much the guy in charge of everything around here. Trust me, this well-oiled machine didn't get like this all by itself. SB Podcast may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor.
OG's overrated. Joe, seriously, what is the big deal about this guy? I've been on this Friday show from the beginning and I get no fanfare.
Welcome to the after show, the part of the show that doesn't exist. Len, I got afraid because halfway through our recording here, OG got really excited about sharing something on the after show, which never happens.
Well, you shouldn't be scared. Let's dig right in.
Len's like, we'll hold hands and get through it together.
I love this article. This just makes me smile beyond belief. There's this iced tea company. Did you catch wind of this?
Oh, I already know I know the story. Yeah, this is go, my man, go, my man. This is a good one.
Yeah, this is great. So, ticker symbol is LTEA, Long Island Iced Tea Company. Gosh, gotta love a little Long Island iced tea. Takes you back to like, you know, you're like 20 and a half, not quite 21, and you're at the wayside and not Pleasant, Michigan. You're like, what's up? I got a Long Island iced tea. Things were going so great with Long Island Iced Tea Company. I was looking at their ticker symbol. They've been all over the board. Boy, they IPO'd, looks like in 2009, IPO'd around 90 a share.
Wow, that's a good number.
And not too bad. By the end of 2010, we're trading around 3.
Well, that's a bad number.
You know, it's kind of sucky day. Anyway, it pretty much held their own between $1 and $3 for a long, long time. And then all of a sudden, unexplained increase from $2 to $6.50. And you think, what could be the cause of this? Maybe a better Long Island iced tea recipe or
new product,
maybe increased sales or new distribution model.
Maybe some great new engineers like Len Penzo working for him.
Hey, got it. Got into Walmart.
Absolutely.
Hey, got into Walmart. Nope. Way better than that, Joe. What do you think the reason for Long Island Iced Tea Company's stock price going up 250% in one day was caused from?
I'm trying to think of like Jordan Belfort somehow getting involved.
Yeah, you're close.
Am
you're
I
close.
Really?
It's kind of like a pump and dump. Is it? Yeah, a little bit.
Is it? But it's not way like better, it's not like yeah. Kramer mentioning it or something.
Way better. They changed. Well, let me give you a little hint. They did a little corporate reorganization. Maybe kind of in corporate speak, they pivoted. So now they're going to expand into other markets.
Cannabis.
So they changed their name, way better, changed their name to Long Blockchain Corporation.
Oh, my. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And it worked.
And their stock jumped 250%.
That's unbelievable.
It jumped 500% initially. Oh, 500%. And I'll give you another example. The very same period is the same. I don't know if it was the same week or the week before.
This is right before Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There was another company called Bioptics. They're a medical tech development company.
Sounds like a great company.
Yeah. They do animal. It's animal medical tech development. Okay. So veterinarian services. And their stock price was languishing, you know, $3-4. It was just not going anywhere.
Listed, pink sheets. Nobody's buying. I like it. You've got to come out. You're the CEO. You go, we need ideas, people.
The price jumped to $40 a share almost overnight.
Please tell me there's some.
Do you want to guess? Do you want to guess what their secret was?
I'm going to go with Joe's cannabis idea.
No.
Was it blockchain?
It was blockchain. Yeah. Yes. They changed the name of the company, Bioptics, an animal medical tech development company. You can look this up. They changed the name of the company to Riot Blockchain, and the stock went from $4 to $40. You can look it up.
I seriously think, and we got to have a serious meeting about this. I want to change the art on our show just for one day and see what happens. If we change this to the Stacking Blockchain podcast. And
no, Blockchain Benjamins.
Blockchain Benjamins.
You got the alliteration.
Yeah, Len, you're so good at that. We got to do that. We got to do that one day.
Wait, I'll watch my crypto account and I'll tell you when the stock goes up a whole bunch or when it goes up a whole bunch. And when it's up like 400% in one day, then we'll do it that day.
We seriously have to do it. And on that day's podcast, just have just a big fat middle finger to everybody and talk about like budgeting, like line item budgeting instead.
On like that a dry podcast. Like, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining the Blockchain Benjamin podcast. On today's show, we're going to talk about the very important components of blockchain, as in particularly the blockchain associated with your specific blockchain. And here, of course, we're talking about your personal cash flow statement. So let's start with income, everybody. Get out a piece of paper or get out your blockchain, whatever you got. And
haircuts. How much blockchain would you allocate toward haircuts?
0.00006 Bitcoin.
Trip to the supermarket. How much blockchain would you put toward that? And we could have like this like wrestling discussion where Len's like, oh, hell no, I wouldn't go over 0.7 blockchain on my groceries.
I think you might use Bitcoin. Blockchain's the system.
I know.
Bitcoin is the...
So frustrating. All right. When Ty Lopez has the number one podcast in your area about blockchain, you're just, oh boy.
Dude, what we need to do is, my buddy's got a Ferrari. We could go stand in front of it.
We totally need to.
You know, I could ask him and be like, hey, do you think I could go stand in front of your car and take a picture or two?
Yeah. You could buy a Ferrari right now for maybe 5 or 6 Bitcoin, I think.
There it is. That's all we need. More
than about 10.
Yeah, maybe. No, right. Easy, Len. It's 10, not 5. Right. All right, guys. Thanks for playing.
Yeah.